The morning felt tense before anyone said a word. Agents stepped from dark vehicles near the waterfront tower that housed Rothstein Rosenfeld Adler. Uniforms moved with purpose. Phones inside the building went silent as word spread floor to floor. No one knew the full picture. They only knew the firm that lived on speed and spectacle had stalled overnight. Scott Rothstein had built his name into a symbol of success in South Florida. He moved through charity galas, political dinners, and high-end parties with the ease of someone who knew every door would open for him. People trusted him because wealth surrounded him wherever he stood. They believed the settlements he sold were real. Now the staff watched the scene shift from rumor to reality. Something large had broken open. The question moved from whispers to certainty. How long had this been building behind the polished walls of the firm? Chapter 1. The Weight Behind the Glass. The lobby lights came on before sunrise. Staff walked in with the same quick pace they used every morning, but something felt different. A few people glanced toward the long hallway that led to the executive offices. The offices were closed. No sound came from behind the frosted glass where Scott Rothstein usually made his first calls of the day. The silence was heavy. It pressed against the building in a way no one could explain. They pushed forward, unsure why the air felt heavier than usual. By 8 in the morning, the firm was awake. Phones rang in steady bursts. Assistants sorted files into carts. Paralegals hurried past each other while juggling schedules. All of it looked normal from the outside, yet the tension sat in small details. People whispered. Eyes moved from door to door. A few employees checked their phones more often than usual. Something was off and no one could name it. Rothstein Rosenfeld Adler did not leave much room for slow mornings. The rhythm of the place mirrored Scott Rothstein himself. Fast, loud, always pushing for more. He walked the floors with quick steps. He talked with the force of someone used to shaping outcomes. To clients, he was the man who knew every judge in town. To donors, he was the man who never missed a political dinner. To the people who worked for him, he was the engine that pulled the entire machine. He had not shown up yet. That was the first break in the rhythm. A junior partner checked his watch. He kept glancing toward the elevator. Rothstein rarely missed an early arrival. It was part of the image he built. He wanted people to see him as a man who lived inside momentum. He had often said that success came from staying ahead of the next person who doubted you. He acted like someone who believed every step needed to be louder than the one before it. By mid-morning, the questions moved beyond whispers. A receptionist sent a message to her supervisor. "Has Scott checked in?" The answer came back with two words. "Not yet." The supervisor followed with another line. "He is probably in meetings outside." No one believed it fully. They nodded anyway because the alternative felt too large to consider. The truth was that the firm had been living with pressure long before this morning. People had seen small signs, a late payment here, a tense closed door meeting there. A few weeks earlier, one accountant had raised concerns about a wire transfer that did not match supporting records. A senior manager brushed it off and said it was a timing error. The accountant dropped the matter. The message was clear: do not push. To the outside world, the firm looked unstoppable. It sat inside a glass tower near the waterfront. Its name appeared at charity events, political banquets, and business conferences. Clients walked into a lobby lined with modern art. Cameras flashed when Rothstein arrived at public functions. He moved with the confidence of someone who never needed to justify his success. His tailored suits, his polished shoes, his bold cufflinks. Every part of him looked like a promise that money would follow. He built the image with purpose. He understood that people trusted what they could see. If he walked through a room with luxury at his back, then people assumed he had earned it. If he said he had access to settlement deals worth millions, then people believed the deals existed. His power did not come from documents or research. It came from the stage he built around himself. His rise in South Florida legal circles added to the illusion. He had started as a young attorney with a sharp sense for negotiation. He knew how to pull attention into a room. That skill brought clients. Clients brought money. Money brought influence. He joined partnership discussions with a sense of inevitability. By the time he helped build Rothstein Rosenfeld Adler, he carried a network that stretched from business leaders to political figures. People liked to repeat the story of how he once secured a settlement faster than anyone expected. They said he worked the phones with such intensity that the opposing counsel folded under the pressure. They said he never slowed down. The stories grew with each telling. The image built itself as much as he built it. He leaned into that momentum. He wanted the world to see him as a man with no ceiling. His lifestyle made that message louder. Anyone who visited his waterfront home left with a memory of marble floors, high ceilings, and a view that looked like it had been pulled from a luxury magazine. The cars in his garage drew attention. Bright colors, rare models, engines that roared when he pressed the starter. He would host dinners where guests saw signed photographs on the walls from political figures. He would stand near the table while people admired his success. He acted as if the admiration was part of the meal. This was the world that made his investment pitch seem believable. Investors were told they could buy portions of confidential settlements. The story was simple. Clients wanted fast payouts and were willing to discount their settlements. Investors could purchase those settlements and collect structured returns. The idea sounded legitimate because settlement factoring existed in the real world. The twist came in the details. Nothing about these settlements was real. He did not present the deals like a salesman. He presented them like a man granting access to a rare opportunity. He held the files with care. He spoke with certainty. He walked investors through office hallways where energy seemed to pulse from room to room. He made them feel like they were stepping into a world that only a few people could reach. Many of those investors already respected him. Some knew him from political fundraisers. Others saw him as a man who always backed winners. Trust came easily. The early investors were paid quickly. That strengthened the illusion. The returns were steady. The firm looked strong. The offices expanded. New hires filled the conference rooms. No one inside the firm was told that the money flowing in had nothing to do with legal victories. Staff believed the firm was winning high-value cases. They did not see the false documents being created behind closed doors. The scheme grew fast. Each new round of money filled the gaps left by the last one. Rothstein managed the flow with urgency. He told staff to prioritize certain transfers. He gave instructions that did not follow standard accounting practice. Some employees raised questions quietly. They were told that the settlements involved sensitive matters and could not be discussed. The pressure to stay silent grew as the pace increased. By late 2008, the workload shifted. Employees noticed a growing number of late-night meetings. Doors stayed closed. Assistants were told to reroute calls. A few lawyers confided to each other that they felt uneasy about the volume of funds moving through the firm with little explanation. Still, no one pushed the issue in a formal setting. Rothstein had built a culture where loyalty meant moving with his speed, not questioning his direction. The pressure reached a new level in the months that followed. Staff were asked to prepare documents that looked like settlement confirmations. Some of these documents were created with signatures that no one saw being signed. When a paralegal asked a supervisor why the process did not follow the usual chain of custody, the supervisor told her to follow instructions. She did. But she walked away with a feeling that something was slipping beneath the surface. Rothstein himself seemed more restless. He spoke faster. He pushed harder. When someone asked about the firm's future plans, he said they were heading into the strongest growth period yet. He smiled when he said it. Yet his eyes moved in quick glances, as if he was searching for an exit he had not yet needed. The first cracks appeared to those closest to him. A longtime employee noticed that Rothstein avoided certain financial meetings. A partner observed that travel expenses increased sharply without explanation. An internal accountant reported that several wires had no matching invoices. Each concern was pushed aside with urgent instructions to focus on client needs. The message was clear: keep the machine moving. By early 2009, the tension inside the firm had become a quiet undercurrent. People worked faster, but talked less. It felt as if questions hung in the air with no safe place to land. The firm had reached a point where the appearance of strength mattered more than stability itself. And the appearance held because everyone believed it needed to hold. The final sign came on a Friday morning when an assistant tried to confirm a meeting with an investor. She searched for the file on the internal system. The file path had been altered. When she asked a manager why it had changed, she was told that the matter had been transferred to a restricted folder. The tone of the instruction left no room for follow-up. She nodded. She left. She carried the unease with her for the rest of the day. A few hours later, employees saw Rothstein walk through the lobby with a forced calm. He nodded at people. He said good morning. But his steps lacked the usual confidence. He went straight to his office and closed the door. Some staff exchanged looks. They felt something shifting, but could not name the shape of the worry. That night, the office stayed lit longer than usual. People passed by his door and saw him speaking on the phone with quick movements. He paced, he paused, he picked up another line. The door stayed closed. No one dared interrupt. The next morning, the silence returned. It sat inside the building like a weight. Staff arrived to find his office empty. No one had seen him leave his home. No one had heard from him since the night before. A senior partner told everyone to continue their work. He said the firm was fine. His voice carried strain. The question formed in the minds of everyone present. How did a man who lived through speed and spectacle allow this much silence to settle behind him? The answer waited beyond the outline of what they could see. The first cracks had widened into a gap they could no longer ignore. The real breach had already begun. Chapter 2. The center begins to tear. Morning traffic moved along the streets outside the tower, but inside the firm, the mood had shifted from uneasy silence to a tight readiness. Staff entered with their eyes up and their phones in hand. They checked messages twice. They looked for signs that the building would settle back into its old rhythm. It did not. Every step echoed louder in the hallways. People tried to work, yet the feeling of something unfinished followed them through each task. A group of employees gathered near the break room. Someone said they heard that a major investor had shown up the night before asking for documents. Someone else said they saw Rothstein leaving the parking garage in the middle of the night. None of the stories carried proof. They still spread. People repeated them because the lack of answers left too much space for imagination. In a place built on confidence, the absence of clear direction felt dangerous. The investment program that ran through the firm had reached deep into South Florida's business community. The victims came from every corner of that world. Some were wealthy business owners who trusted Rothstein because they saw him at charity galas. Some were political donors who wanted to strengthen connections. Others were retirees who believed the steady returns would support their families. The deals promised security. The documents looked official. The tone of certainty in Rothstein's voice closed any lingering doubt. The firm never presented these investments as a side venture. They were framed as rare opportunities tied to confidential settlements. Investors were told that parties in those settlements were willing to sell their payout rights for immediate cash at a reduced value. That alone could have been plausible. But the interest rates offered were far higher than industry norms. The documentation carried authenticity at a glance, but deeper review would show that many signatures were copied images placed on new pages. Inside the firm, the mechanics of the scheme grew more demanding. People in accounting handled transfers they did not understand. Assistants prepared intake files for investors they had never met. The pace left little room for questions. When concerns surfaced, managers insisted that the settlements involved private matters. Confidentiality explained everything. At least that was the line used. Staff accepted it because they wanted to believe the firm was rising, not sinking. One former employee later said that the pressure came from the top floor. The message was simple: do not slow the process. If something looks unusual, keep moving. The firm paid well. The offices sparkled. Promotions looked possible. In environments like that, silence grows naturally. People assume the success they see must have a solid foundation. They do not imagine that the foundation is air. Even so, some employees had begun to question Rothstein's choices. Months earlier, he had pushed for more political donations. He hosted gatherings where guests walked through rooms filled with displays of wealth. He brought investors into his home and allowed them to see the scale of his lifestyle. These invitations were part of the illusion. When people saw him surrounded by luxury, they assumed he was a man whose financial success came from legitimate sources. The staff watching these displays felt a mixture of pride and confusion. The firm had grown quickly, but the gap between normal law firm revenue and Rothstein spending widened by the month. People asked each other how the math worked. The conversations stayed quiet. Staff did not want to be seen as questioning the firm's leader. The political world amplified Rothstein's credibility. He attended fundraisers. He took photos with state and federal officials. He donated large sums to campaigns. He traveled in circles that most attorneys never entered. These actions carried weight. Investors believed that someone with that level of access must operate within legal bounds. They thought political connections served as a kind of shield. They did not realize those connections were part of the sales strategy. Meanwhile, inside the accounting department, irregularities kept appearing. A junior accountant noticed that certain transfers were routed through multiple internal accounts before going to investors. When she tried to match those transfers to invoices, the numbers did not align. She flagged the issue to a supervisor. The supervisor told her to finalize the ledger and let leadership handle the justification. She followed instructions, but she carried the concern with her. A partner who had joined the firm during one of its expansion periods noticed another irregularity. He tried to review documentation for a large investment that had supposedly closed months earlier. The files were incomplete. Some were scanned copies with no originals in the system. He approached a senior figure at the firm who told him that the documents were sealed for confidentiality. The partner left the conversation with more doubt than certainty. The firm's operations became more chaotic as the scheme expanded. Investors began calling more often. They wanted updates on their settlements. Some wanted to increase their positions. Others asked for earlier payouts. Rothstein used his charisma to handle them. He promised results. He told them he had everything under control. He spoke with the force of someone who believed his own story. That confidence carried the illusion. Behind the scenes, the numbers were deteriorating. The flow of new money slowed. The volume of obligations grew. The structure depended on incoming funds. Without them, the entire scheme would collapse. Rothstein pushed harder for new investors. He sent staff to prepare conference rooms for meetings that moved at rapid speed. He used his public profile to attract wealthy individuals who wanted access to the next opportunity. By mid-2009, the tension climbed. Staff reported that Rothstein seemed more agitated. He called meetings with a sharp tone. He pushed deadlines forward. He demanded faster responses from everyone. Some employees said he looked exhausted. Others said he had lost patience. The mood in the building shifted. The atmosphere that once felt energetic now carried a sense of urgency that bordered on panic. Banks started raising questions. One financial institution noticed the high volume of wires moving through accounts that did not match typical law firm activity. They contacted the firm for explanation. Rothstein responded with assurances that the transactions were tied to large settlement payouts. He offered documents. Some matched, some did not. The questions continued. A major turning point came when a bank froze a transaction pending review. This forced delays in investor payouts. Internally, staff scrambled. They tried to reroute funds. They searched for backup documents. When they could not find them, they contacted Rothstein directly. He told them to stay calm and wait for his instructions. People waited, but the silence from his office grew longer. This freeze exposed a weakness in the system. The scheme required constant motion. If one channel closed, the pressure shifted to another. If too many questions appeared at once, the structure risked collapse. Rothstein felt the weight of that pressure. He tried to mask it with confidence, but his energy changed. He left meetings abruptly. He spent longer hours behind closed doors. He made calls that staff could not trace. Some employees started reaching out to outside contacts. They wanted advice without revealing too much. They used vague descriptions. "Something is wrong at the firm. I do not know what it is." They hoped someone would reassure them. Instead, the responses increased their worries. People told them to be careful. They said that the gaps in documentation looked serious. They said firms cannot hide irregular flows forever. Within the firm, the silence spread. People avoided hard discussions. They worked through files with forced focus. They watched Rothstein move through the halls with a strained expression. They noticed that he no longer greeted people with the same bold confidence. He looked distracted. He looked pulled in too many directions. The midpoint crisis arrived quietly. One afternoon, an investor asked to verify a settlement through a third party. This request threatened everything. If the investor made contact with the supposed claimant, the truth would be exposed immediately. Staff forwarded the request to Rothstein. He did not respond for hours. When he finally replied, he instructed them to say that the settlement was under strict confidentiality rules and could not be verified. They followed the instruction. The investor accepted the explanation for the moment, but the question had been raised. It would return. As pressure grew, allies inside the firm began turning into observers. A few employees started saving copies of suspicious documents. Some prepared private notes. They felt the structure near collapse. They wanted to protect themselves if the truth came out. Cooperation with investigators had not begun publicly, but several staff members were already preparing for that moment. The final days before the break were marked by confusion. Investors called more frequently. Some asked for full withdrawals. Others wanted to meet in person. Staff struggled to keep pace. They delivered messages to Rothstein's office. They waited for direction. Responses came slowly or not at all. Late one evening, a senior administrator noticed that Rothstein's office lights were on long after most people had left. She knocked once. There was no answer. She opened the door a few inches and saw him on the phone. His desk was covered with papers. He scribbled notes with quick strokes. He did not look up. She closed the door. She walked away with a feeling that something irreversible had already occurred. The next morning, he did not return. His absence shifted everything. Staff knew the firm depended on him for all major decisions. Without him, the workflow froze. A few employees met privately in a small conference room. They discussed what they had seen over the past months. They wondered whether they should contact outside authorities. They worried about what their silence had allowed. The breaking point arrived when a large investor demanded proof of a payout that had supposedly been deposited days earlier. When staff could not provide evidence, the investor grew alarmed. He said he would come to the office. He said he wanted answers. This call set off a chain reaction. Messages were sent across departments. People gathered files. Supervisors tried to calm the situation. They realized they had no solutions. The sense of structure that had held the firm together began to collapse. People watched the process unfold with the awareness that they were standing inside a moment too large to manage. They knew that once the truth reached the surface, the building would never return to its old rhythm. The question that had hovered for months now sharpened. What had pushed a successful attorney to build a scheme so large it consumed his entire firm? The answer waited just beyond view. The collapse had begun. The truth was about to surface. Chapter 3, The Collapse and the Cost. The morning he vanished set the final chain in motion. Staff arrived expecting direction, hoping his absence was temporary. Instead, they found the office frozen. Messages piled up. Investors kept calling. Every unanswered question became sharper. People stood by their desks with the look of those waiting for impact. They knew something irreversible had begun. They just did not know how fast it would move. A partner tried to hold a brief meeting in the main conference room. He told the staff to remain focused on their work. He said Rothstein was handling a private matter and would return soon. No one believed the words. The tone behind them lacked conviction. The staff dispersed without speaking. The building felt hollow. The absence of its central figure exposed how much of the firm's structure depended on his presence alone. Outside the firm, the alarm spread faster. One investor arrived at the tower early in the morning. He asked for details about his settlement payout. When staff could not produce documents, he demanded to speak to Rothstein. They told him Rothstein was not in the building. He asked when he would return. They said they did not know. He walked through the lobby with rising anger. He made calls from his cell phone. His voice echoed off the glass walls. Others in the lobby listened. They heard his questions turning into threats of legal action. The illusion had cracked. Word traveled quickly. more investors called. Some drove to the office. One said he needed verification of funds he believed were already transferred. Another said he wanted his principal returned immediately. Staff could not provide answers. They searched the internal systems. Files were incomplete. Transfers stopped mid-flow. The gaps became undeniable. It reached a point where no one could hide behind excuses of confidentiality anymore. The firm's senior leadership gathered in a small room behind the executive offices. They tried to review the books, they tried to track the investments, they realized how little they understood about the flow of money. This was the moment the truth began to take shape. The settlement program was not a side operation within the firm. It was the core of the entire financial structure. Without new investor funds, nothing held together. And there were no new funds coming. By midday, the panic spread into the surrounding business community. Investors who had trusted Rothstein called each other. They shared fragments of information. They visited banks. They tried to trace transfers. What they found raised deeper suspicion. Some accounts were empty. Some showed movement of funds in patterns that made no sense for legitimate settlement payouts. Banks began internal reviews. Executives contacted federal authorities. The structure that had been built on confidence could not survive scrutiny. While this unfolded in the office, Rothstein was already on a flight to Morocco. He carried small bags. He left behind the appearance of stability he had maintained for years. His departure confirmed what many feared. He knew the scheme had reached its limit. He sought distance before the truth surfaced fully. His move shocked those who learned of it later. A man who built a public identity around control had chosen escape. Inside, the firm staff watched the day break apart. The calls grew more aggressive. Some investors arrived in groups. They demanded answers. They stood in the lobby with tense faces and raised voices. Security tried to manage the flow, but emotions overtook structure. People looked at the firm's name on the wall and wondered how they had missed the warning signs. The building no longer represented success. It represented betrayal. The FBI arrived within hours. Agents walked through the glass doors with firm steps. Their presence answered the question circulating through every floor. This was not a misunderstanding or a delay. Something criminal had taken place. Agents entered the executive offices. Staff watched from a distance. Some felt fear. Others felt relief. They had been waiting for someone with authority to take control. Agents requested files, electronic records, and internal communications. Some documents were missing. Others were altered. Digital logs revealed inconsistencies. The scale of the problem grew with each step. It became clear that the money owed to investors was far greater than anything the firm could produce. The structure had collapsed completely. The forensic work began immediately. Accountants traced wire transfers. They examined email chains. They reviewed the settlement files. The documents did not hold up. Many signatures were identical across different pages. Some dates made no sense. Others contradicted company records. What looked legitimate at a glance fell apart under review. The depth of the scheme became impossible to deny. Investors gathered outside the building after hearing the first news reports. Some paced, some cried, some stared at the tower in disbelief. They had trusted Rothstein. They believed in his confidence, his access, his promises of security. Many had invested life savings. Others had borrowed money because they believed the returns were guaranteed. The losses struck across families, businesses, and communities. By the evening of the first day, federal authorities confirmed he had left the country. That news traveled fast. It added weight to the collapse. Staff who once admired him now felt shock mixed with anger. They talked quietly in hallways. They asked each other how they failed to see the truth. They replayed moments from the past year, noticing details they had ignored or explained away. The realization settled in. They had been working inside a structure built on deception. Days later, Rothstein returned to the United States. Reports indicated that he had contacted authorities and agreed to cooperate. His return surprised many. Some believed he had planned to stay abroad permanently. Others thought he came back because he saw no path forward alone. Whatever the reason, his return became the final acknowledgement that the scheme had ended. His cooperation allowed investigators to map the full structure. It revealed how long the fraud had operated and how many people it reached. During the investigation, he described the program in plain terms. He admitted the settlements were fictional. He admitted the documents were fabricated. He explained how investor funds were used to create the appearance of legitimate returns. He addressed the political donations. He said they were part of building influence and attracting new investors. His statements filled the gaps that staff and investigators had struggled to understand. The law firm did not survive the fallout. It entered bankruptcy. Employees lost their jobs. Some faced scrutiny and questions about their roles. Most were cleared. Many felt lasting damage to their reputations. They had spent years believing they were part of a rising firm. Instead, they learned they had been part of a structure built to mask a fraud. Victims worked through long recovery processes. Some received partial restitution through asset seizures. Others faced permanent financial loss. The emotional toll remained. People who once trusted the legal system questioned their judgment. They felt the impact not only in their bank accounts, but in their view of trust and access. Rothstein eventually received a 50-year sentence. The courtroom heard from victims. They described their losses. They described their trust. The sentence reflected the scale of the harm. The judge noted the sophistication of the fraud and the damage it caused to public confidence. The outcome marked the end of the legal process, but not the end of the questions raised. The aftermath revealed weaknesses in oversight systems. Banks had raised concerns but lacked full visibility. Staff had sensed irregularities but lacked support to investigate. Investors trusted personal connections more than documentation. Political circles accepted large donations without asking deeper questions. The case exposed how image, wealth, and influence can create a shield strong enough to hide serious wrongdoing. In South Florida, the story became a warning. It showed how easily trust can be manipulated when confidence is packaged with luxury. It showed how a professional title can mask deception when the surrounding environment rewards appearance over substance. It also showed the cost of silence. Many people had noticed signs. Few pursued them. Inside the empty halls of the former firm, the silence returned. The rooms, once filled with energy and ambition, now held only the echo of what had been lost. The name on the wall no longer represented success. It represented caution. People who walked past the shuttered office felt the weight of a lesson learned through painful experience. The case left one final question for anyone who followed its story. How does a system rebuild trust once it has been broken by someone who understood exactly how to exploit it? The answer carried no simple path. The damage had been done. The cost had been counted. The truth had surfaced, but the scar it left would remain for years to come.